Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From WNYC, New York Public Radio, this is the podcast of The Brian Lehrer Show. I'm Brian Lehrer. This is just one segment of today's show. The rest of today's show is available for download and on-demand listening at WNYC.org. This podcast is made possible by WNYC and its listeners. Please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org.
WNYC podcasts are supported by Holy Name Hospital in Teaneck, New Jersey, providing comprehensive centers in cardiovascular services, interventional radiology, and cancer care. More information at www.holyname.org.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and we are delighted to have with us now the playwright, John Patrick Shanley. His play, Doubt, now on Broadway, won a Pulitzer Prize. What you may not know is that Doubt is the first in a trilogy of plays, and the second one is now showing on the Manhattan Theater Club main stage at City Center. It's called Defiance. Just as Doubt, built on Shanley's experiences as a Catholic school student in the Bronx in the 1960s, Defiance draws on his time as a Marine at Camp Lejeune in North Carolina during the early 70s. He calls both works hierarchy plays, as both deal with the ethics of power and abuse of power in their respective institutions. Shanley, by the way, is that very rare combination of Pulitzer winner and Oscar winner. Shanley won the Oscar for Best Original Screenplay for Moonstruck. Remember that? Great New York Italian-American movie with Cher and Olympia Dukakis, who both also won Oscars for their performances back in the late 80s. It is a pleasure to welcome John Patrick Shanley to WNYC. Thanks so much for coming in.
It's my pleasure to be here.
That term hierarchy plays, was that the core of the idea for your trilogy?
To be frank, to begin with, I wrote Doubt and didn't know I was writing a trilogy of plays. And it was only when I started to write the second play that I realized that the subject that was of great interest to me was hierarchies in America.
And Doubt revolves around charges of child sexual abuse by a priest. Defiance revolves around questions of power and responsibility in the military during the Vietnam War. Did you try specifically to build on the themes of Doubt with the themes of Defiance?
I had the experience as a human being growing up in the 50s and 60s of experiencing first doubt about some of the things that the institutions that I was involved with, the things that they were espousing, and then moving from there to having a rebellious streak, a defiant streak about that, as did, you know, a great portion of the population of this and other countries. And it occurred to me that that series of cultural waves that went through the culture back then was going through the culture again, and maybe at a heightened speed, and that things that happened then might illuminate things that were going on now.
And so the way you just put it, Doubt begot Defiance.
Indeed.
And also, I think that a lot of people have interpreted the word doubt in the title of the play as meaning uncertainty. I think the way you just used it, starting to doubt the authorities, is doubt as skepticism rather than doubt as uncertainty.
I think I'd go beyond skepticism as a characterization of the way that I use the word doubt, in that it's not simply a negative thing where you start to, as a child, doubt some simple things that are being told to you as great verities, but that you have alternative impressions that suggest other realities and other philosophies than the ones that are being taught to you. So the doubt becomes an extremely vigorous, active, exciting, present play way to live, rather than a series of certainties that allows you to hear and see nothing.
We can take a few phone calls for John Patrick Shanley. Have you seen Doubt or Defiance? Want to give the playwright any feedback or engage the issues that he raises? He asked for it by giving it was your email address, right, on the playbill of Doubt?
I did indeed. It's also in the playbill for Defiance.
And our phone number, 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. Why did you solicit audience feedback that way?
it just seemed to me to be a natural outgrowth of how things have changed, and that we all have a little bit more access to each other. And rather than trying to overhear what people were saying in the lobby, which I'm not very good at, I could get letters from people and they could tell me what they thought.
Did you get illuminating responses?
I certainly did. I've gotten a tremendous number of responses, and my plays are being done all over the world. So I'm hearing right now from people in Auckland and people in Sydney, Australia, and Doubt opens in Paris in about a week and a half, directed by Roman Polanski. And I will undoubtedly receive French emails.
I saw it. Can you read French?
I cannot, but my girlfriend can.
Okay, that's good. To save you money on a translator. I saw Defiance Friday night, and most interesting to me was the tension that you created between the aging colonel who wanted to accomplish one big thing before he retired, have a good, clean fight on the side of right, and his wife and the other officer in the play who just want to live their lives. Is that a tension that you experience or that you find particularly interesting in the world?
Well, the officer who just wants to be invisible and live his life and never go center stage is black, which I think has something to do with it, that the black officer and the woman in the play have the experience, as the woman says, of you can see things better from the bench, I think is illustrative of something about what I'm talking about in the play, which is that people who are into power and who have power very often can't see what they're doing or what's going on around them because they're very involved in their personal drama. And people who are not involved in a big personal drama often have more objectivity and contemplative ability than those center stage participants.
So it's no accident that the two people with the most power in this play, the colonel and the chaplain, are both white men, and you have the wife and you have the other officer who's black as from the bench, as you say.
Yes, and those two sides clash in a sense, one because they don't want to be in the center of things and the other because they do.
And without giving away too many plot surprises, the desire to do good, in this case the desire to fight racial discrimination by the colonel, indirectly leads to an immoral act. And so are you trying to discourage people from trying to solve social problems?
Not at all. I'm questioning the motives of people who showboat in our society, being central to change rather than the vast, invisible, altruistic streak in our world where there are so many people doing so many great things and not receiving awards for them.
Mm. And again, trying not to give too much away, the quest for doing something socially and politically good led to a moral lapse by the colonel in a pretty much unrelated realm of that character's personal life. I actually have not yet figured out for myself, as somebody who saw the play, why you took it in that direction. Why did you connect his professional do-gooder impulse and his personal life in that way?
I can't claim authorship of that idea. That's something that happened in our culture fairly recently, where a president of the United States, for a personal or quasi-personal gaffe, was impeached, or they attempted to impeach him. And it, the fact that he was a leader, a commander in chief, and that somewhere within his bureaucracy was somebody that he trifled with inappropriately became a crucial element in the undoing of the Democratic Party, I think is pretty germane to the time we live in.
Interesting parallel. My guest, the playwright, John Patrick Shanley, who wrote Doubt and now Defiance. And we can take some phone calls for him at 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. And let's take one now. Randy in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Saw Doubt and Defiance last night, in fact.
Oh.
So this is very fresh for me. Loved them both. I have to tell audience members that one of the real treats of the thing, of your writing, that I'm so in awe of, is how you go from serious guffaws of laughter to serious subject matter so deftly. It's really enjoyable. But my question is, at the end, this is touchy because I don't want to give anything away to people who haven't seen it, there seems to be a forgiveness and reconciliation that just sort of pops out of the blue. And I was wondering two things. One is how you saw her reaction to sort of get to that spot so quickly. And two, had the incident occurred sort of without an enlisted man's involvement, would you still have seen the moral dilemma? In the case of Clinton, that you just said she was an intern, had she been more of a civilian, would it have mattered, for instance?
Yeah, actually, the girl that the colonel trifled with, I don't mind giving that away, is in fact a civilian. She's married to somebody who's under his command, and that's the fatal connection that the colonel has to deal with. In the larger scheme of things, as to whether or not the colonel's wife is going to forgive the colonel is up for grabs. What she does is she's had a long marriage with this guy, and she wants to stay around to see how he's going to behave in that moment. And she does get to see how he's going to behave.
Yes. My wife actually thought that it was that she didn't react with the personal outrage of a wife betrayed, but rather reacted as kind of a moral police officer, seeing if he was going to do the right thing by the service, which she thought would not be the first reaction of a wife in the real world.
Yes, but this is a military wife, and she's been dealing with supporting a man who fought in the Korean War and fought in the Vietnam War, and in both cases freely admits that he has no idea what the conflicts were about, but feels comfortable with it because he was obeying orders, that she values those ignorances on a level of parity with a personal infidelity, I don't think is impossible. It's simply individual.
It speaks to the submergence of individual life for military life in that context.
Yes.
Both plays have central black characters. The boy who's allegedly molested in Doubt is black. The second officer in Defiance is black. How do you as a white man go about writing an authentic black character?
Well, you know, how does a guy write a woman? How does a guy write somebody who's Chinese? The goal and the mission of the writer is to look about him or her in the world and depict it as they see it. And what I see in this country at this time is that we're really cut off from our arms and legs, that there is a huge racial problem in this country that is going fairly invisibly along until payday comes again, in whatever form it is this time. The number of people in prison in this country is appalling. It's a separate population, and it needs to be addressed. It's not enough simply to say when somebody does wrong that they go to prison and that's enough. We have created a separate culture. We've created a separate military culture where we have no draft and no feeling of responsibility across the country for the conflicts that we greenlight as a country, as a population, so that we don't feel it. We don't feel the blood. We don't feel the pain of these people who are incarcerated and their families that are affected in waves that go out in concentric circles through generations. We have a lot to deal with, and the reason I think that we're not feeling the mandate of dealing with it is we are being insulated from it, and that has to change.
Roe on Long Island. You're on WNYC with John Patrick Shanley. Hello.
Hello, Patrick Shanley. I loved your writing. I think that you are such an interesting writer, and I wanted to ask you how, if at all, you perceive the issue of faith in the conflict between the different issues that you present your characters as dealing with in your plays.
Thank you. That's a great question. I think that, you know, one of the things that we experience every day in our lives is various kinds of faith. We have the military has faith that the commands that are coming down from the executive branch, from the people above them, are morally acceptable, are legally acceptable. And I'm afraid that that's very much in question at this time. We have faith in our churches that their guidance, their moral guidance, is going to be sound and is going to be based on good motives. And we have reason to notice that on many occasions this is not true, as when the Catholic Church comes out against condom use in Africa, which amounts to, you know, being somewhat responsible for many, 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 many people dying. And I think that the reason that the place that we have to look is not simply in criticizing these institutions, these hierarchies, but that these institutions are based on philosophies that need to be reexamined. We need to go back and ask the questions that Socrates was asking in the gardens of Academe. We need to go back and say, what is the state? What is it for? What is good? What is just? It's time to go back to those basic questions.
Ro, thank you for your call. By the way, today, I believe, is the very day that that play about Rachel Corrie, the American protester who was killed in the Palestinian territories, was going to open in New York. It's now been postponed over great controversy. For what reason? Political pressure one way or the other. Do you have an opinion about that whole thing?
Oh, I certainly do. I think that we're living in incredibly interesting times, and unlike the Chinese proverb, I actually like that. I think that the motives of the people who are going to produce this play off Broadway in New York are not adequately known, and I think that they should be aired. It's a very interesting subject, but it highlights a larger phenomenon, which is of an international gangsterism towards the arts at this time. I consider the New York Times not publishing the cartoons about Mohammed to be an act of editorial cowardice and inappropriate. It obviously was major news. This idea of it being sensitive to religion, respectful to religion, not to air differences, not to air slurs, not to air slights, is just giving in to intimidation of different kinds. Now, the theater in New York may not have been afraid that they were going to be killed. They may have been afraid they were going to lose funding from somebody. That I don't know. But I do know that there's intimidation across this country in the arts, where plays like Greece are being vetoed by local organizations as being too racy, and cartoons are being called unworthy of publication because religion, the sensitivities of people of a certain religion, trumps the need of people of every persuasion to know. And I think that it has to be looked at. And, you know, there's a certain degree of cowardice involved. And I think people are going to have to get used to the idea that doing these things, like happened to Mr. Van Gogh in the Netherlands, may lead to them being killed.
And by the way, our next topic is going to be about those cartoons. We're going to speak to, among others, the Danish ambassador to talk about the effects on his country. Coming up right after the news. We have 30 seconds. I'm going to sneak in one last question for you. Michael in Manhattan, can you ask it in 10 seconds?
Yeah, sure. Mr. Shanley, I wanted to ask you what the third in your trilogy is going to be.
Defiance and doubt and defiance and?
And I don't know. I'm working on it. I have thoughts about it, but it is still a thing like a distant galaxy that I can see but not get into focus yet, which is always exciting for an artist.
Is it going to be a D word?
Don't know.
That's a D word on which we end. John Patrick Shanley, it's been a great pleasure. Thank you very much.
Great to be here.
Defiance is playing at the Manhattan Theater Club at City Center. Thanks for listening to today's podcast of The Brian Lehrer Show from WNYC, New York Public Radio. This was just one of the show's segments. You can hear everything we do on demand at WNYC.org. Check out our other podcasts at WNYC.org or on iTunes. This podcast is made possible by WNYC and its listeners. Please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org. And thanks.